When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Entering the world of Crisis on Infinite Films, brought to you by All Too Real 2 Podcast.
Okay, everybody, welcome to the latest episode of All Too Real 2. My name is Michael E. Cullen II, and with me, as always, is
Matthew the Human Torch, Sue Storm, The Thing, Mr. Fantastic, Doom Hast.
That's a long name, man.
It's
a long, long name.
It's really hard to sign, you know, papers with and stuff, forms.
Yeah, there's not enough room on that little line that they give you on most, forms. But that's okay, Matt. It's okay.
I just do like the initials, so it's fine.
Oh, okay, so that's good.
Yeah.
So today on the show, we are covering part of our Crisis on Infinite Films series, the 2015 Fantastic Four film, which was directed by Josh Trank. The screenplay was by Jeremy Slater, Simon Kinberg, and Josh Trank, based on The Fantastic Four by Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. It starred Miles Teller, Michael B. Jordan, Kate Mara, Jamie Bell, and Toby Kebbell. Or Kibble. I don't know how you spell it, how you say his name. Yes. This was the third incarnation of the Fantastic Four to be filmed. First being the Roger Corman 1994 version. Then we had the 2005 two film series. There was a Fantastic Four and then Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer. Mm-hmm. Yes. This film did horribly at the box office, sadly, for the people involved. And the reviews are really bad, too, for it. Normally, when we cover these movies, they're basically straight up bad. I actually kind of liked this movie. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. I thought it was actually pretty decent. And, you know, I read a little bit about it and kind of what contributed to being kind of much reviled. Really had nothing. It was no one's fault. I mean, the director, Trank couldn't really do anything about it, you know, and stuff like that. So, you know,
I mean, there are issues with the film, obviously, but it's hard to blame the people involved, unfortunately. I mean, you know, as much as the studio.
Right. I mean, when a studio makes you do something, because they're the ones that have the money, I mean, I mean, you know, and they got the rights to it. I mean, you can't, even if you did pull your own money, that still wouldn't change the fact that the studio owns the rights to it. So, and, you know, you pretty much have to do, yeah. I know, I just read a lot about it, and I was kind of really upset about, you know, that they pretty much hamstringed them. I mean, it was like, you know, nothing you could do about it, you know. Like, it did reshoots, like, a month before the movie came out or something like that, like, or 2 months or whatever. No, sorry, it was like half a year, okay.
Yeah, it was like in January, and it came out in August. But still, anyways, basically, what happens in this movie, Matt?
Well, Reed, I forgot his last name. Richards. Yeah, Reed Richards. He's like a really, you know, smart, like, science student, and he's trying to build a like a teleporter when he's like a kid, like 10 years old, and they're doing like this thing at school, or like where you talk about like what career you want to have when you grow up, and he goes up there and, you know, says what he wants to build, and his science teacher is like one of these, you know, or not, whatever, his teacher is one of these like really skeptical people, like, we're talking about realistic things you could do in the real world, and all this kind of crap or whatever. And then, you know, he kind of, you know, walks back to his desk, you know, all mad and stuff. And then,
by the way, he calls, his teacher is played by Homer Simpson. No.
Yes.
Dan Castellaneta. Yeah.
Yes. So, yeah. Not the character Homer Simpson, but the
voice actor of Homer Simpson.
Sounds kind of creepy if your teacher was just a cartoon figure and everyone else is.
He also appeared in a previous episode of our show as the genie in Return of Jafar.
Yes, that's right. He's been in a bunch of stuff. All kinds of movies and shows. So then he calls on this other kid named Ben Grimm, who sits kind of behind Reed, like a few chairs behind him, and he goes up there and kind of looks at the, you know, the formula that Reed is you know, working on, kind of just sort of curious, you know, about what he's working on. And then then they kind of shoot back to like Reed's house. His family owns like a junkyard. They're kind of poor, and, you know, kind of
Ben's house, not Reed's.
Oh, sorry, Ben's. Yeah, Ben Grimm's house. Yeah. And Ben, you know, he's supposed to be doing his homework, but his older brother is like making him, you know, work and stuff like that, because he's like 10 years old. So obviously, you know, he should start working instead of doing his schoolwork. And then he kind of like roughs him up and stuff like that. And, you know, his mom comes to the rescue and tells Ben to check out, you know, what the dogs are barking at. And then he finds Reed, you know, hiding out in one of the cars because he's trying to steal something to build his machine or whatever. So he agrees to take Ben with him if he can take one of the items for free. So then, you know, they go off to Reed's garage, you know, to tinker with this machine. He wants to transport a like a model car, like a toy car, to like a different place or whatever. And then, you know, he ends up like killing the power in like the whole neighborhood with this like experiment. And then it works, but just a pile of rocks shows up where the, you know, the place where the car was. So they have no idea where it actually got, you know, transported to. his stepdad's, who, by the way, who's played by Tim Heidecker from, what's the show called? Something Great Job. What's it called? Tim and Eric.
Tim and Eric. Awesome show. Great Job or something like that. Yeah.
You know, also from the Casey and His Brother songs, where Casey's always sweating and puking during his anxiety attacks when he's trying to, you know, sing these weird children's songs. That guy was playing his stepfather, which I didn't even know at the time, actually. I didn't even recognize him. And he's like yelling at him like, you did it again. You're tinkering with this crap or whatever. You know, his parents don't really, you know, he's kind of one of these kids who's like, you know, like, he doesn't have a horrible family life. It's not like there's abuse going on and stuff, but it's like, he's one of those kids where it's like, he's just like smarter than this whole family, basically. And no one really can understand what he's talking about, you know, type of thing. So he's kind of, you know, really alienated that way. So like Ben basically becomes like his only friend for the next 8 years or so, and is always kind of just working with him on his projects or whatever. And then like finally, like 8 years later, when they're like in seniors in high school, they show off their invention, you know, during like the science fair or whatever. And Franklin Storm shows up. He's like he kind of works for like this what would you call it, like organization, like for like up and coming scientists or like,
yeah,
something like that. Yeah,
the Baxter Academy.
Yeah, there we go. Cool name.
Yeah, in the comic books, the headquarters of the Fantastic Four is the Baxter Building.
Okay,
so that's probably where they, you know, got that, obviously.
Right. And the thing works, but his teacher is still just being a complete asshole for whatever reason. He just doesn't like Reed. They don't really explain why. But I've had teachers like that for whatever reason, just single out certain students for God knows what reason, and just they don't like him for whatever reason. And he failed him, even though clearly it was a success. Like, I'm thinking, like, how could you not be like that's what I don't get about this. Like, clearly it worked. It teleported the thing somewhere. You would think that that alone would be seen as a success. Like, the fact that something physical was there, then it disappeared.
I mean, even if it was a magic trick, as he claimed, it was still more impressive than like anything else, I think, at the fair, probably.
Right.
So, yeah.
Like, I didn't even get that, where it's like, okay, like, Mr., like, what world do we live in here where apparently everything is, like, so advanced that, like, to you, that's just nothing. Like, oh, yeah, big deal, whatever. And then that's when, you know, Dr. Franklin Storm shows up with his daughter, Sue Storm, and then basically invites him to, you know, work at, like, this really expensive lab and stuff like that, to work on, like, this quantum, whatever it's called, I don't remember the exact name. It's basically basically to get access to like a different dimension, essentially.
It's a quantum gate.
There you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I'll pass the ball to you in a second. And then he goes to move in. Ben, basically, at this point in the movie, it looks like Ben's going to be the Ben Affleck character and Good Will Hunting, where it's like, you know, the smart guy's friend that, like, you know, isn't going anywhere in life or whatever type of thing, you know. And he just kind of gives him like a Swiss Army knife as sort of like his goodbye present. And
yeah,
Reed's like, well, we're still going to talk to each other and blah, blah, blah. He's like, no, it's, you know, this is your new life now and home or whatever. You know, that he gets to work on his, you know, on the project, and then now I'm going to pass the ball to you now.
So, they, recruit, Victor Von Doom, who is, the protege of Dr. Storm. And, he basically came up with the idea for the, quantum gate. And, at the same time, you know, Reed came up with this similar idea. And so they create this group of people to try to finish the idea. And then we have a scene where Johnny Storm, played by Michael B. Jordan, is racing in a car. And then he has a wipeout, and basically his father, Dr. Storm, finds him and then basically makes him work at the lab or whatever you want to call it. And so he helps out with the experiment and everything, with the quantum gate. So, the experiment ends up being successful. Before, we also have like a little, at one point we had a little meet cute between between Reed and Sue. And she explains that the way that she sees the world is through patterns, and that's why she likes music. And she was listening to Portishead, which is good because I love Portishead. Anyways, yeah,
great band.
So, I was just like, wow, they Portishead? Okay. Anyways, haven't thought about them in ages, but I do I do love their album. The one album I have of theirs. I don't know. I'm sure there's more. But anyways, the one that was really popular. And so they anyways, back to the thing, they run the experiment. They put a monkey in the thing and send him to a parallel dimension, because we find out that where Reed was sending things wasn't to like another part of the world. It was actually to a parallel world. And so they decided to name that parallel world Planet Zero. And what ends up happening is once it's successful, Dr. Allen, who is you know, like a guy that's basically funding and overseeing all this shit. he says that they're gonna have to bring in some people from NASA to send them to Planet Zero. And Reed and Victor and everybody are all pissed off at that because they wanted to go there. So they end up getting drunk. Reed and Johnny and Victor do, and then that night they decide while they're intoxicated that they want to, you know, just go themselves, because they're like, you know, we created this, who, you know, and they made up a good point where they talk about how everybody remembers, you know, Neil Armstrong, and but they don't remember the people that, you know, built the spaceships and stuff like that, you know. They want to be remembered as the first people to go to a parallel dimension. So they go, and Reed insists that Ben join them. So he calls up Ben. Ben comes by, and then they travel to Planet Zero. Things are kind of all messed up when they get there. Sue notices that they're doing this. She gets an alert on her computer. She goes and tries to stop it, but, you know, can't. And then while they're there in Planet Zero, they notice this, like, green energy stuff, for lack of a better word. What ends up happening is they all get kind of infected by this shit and gain superpowers. While they're trying to escape the planet, though, Victor falls into the pit of the green shit.
The green shit.
That's a phrase I never thought I'd say. He falls into the pit of the green shit. And
that's a scientific term, by the way.
Yes.
The
green shit. So they end up having to leave Victor behind, and they come back, and when they come back, there's like a big explosion and shit, and Sue gets infected too. Sue becomes invisible as her power, well, the ability to, you know, become invisible.
Yeah.
After they end up giving them these super suits to, you know, help things, but Sue ends up becoming the Invisible Woman. Reed becomes Mr. Fantastic, who can basically stretch his body in all over the place. And unfortunately, Ben becomes the Thing, so he's like a big rock guy.
Mm-hmm.
Which anybody would know if they've ever read the Fantastic Four, but I'm just, right, you know, kind of repeating this. And then Johnny becomes the Human Torch. so he basically can fly and spit fire and, you know, out of his hands and shoot and becomes like a big fire dude.
Yeah, kind of like Firestorm from DC, but just one person, not... Can I ask a question really quick?
Sure.
Okay, when I was watching it, it only seems like Johnny and Ben's powers are the only ones that make sense, because like rocks were like flying in to Ben's whatever you call it, the machine, or I don't know what you call it, the device to get him back, like the car or whatever, and flames, like fire was going into Johnny, so that makes sense, because like that like got infused to their body. But what happened to Sue to make her invisible, and what happened to Reed to be all stretchy and stuff?
Who the hell knows?
Okay, I was just wondering if something happened, because like I saw like flames going into
because
Johnny, like,
yeah, because in the comics they get changed a different way. They're trying to travel to another planet, not another dimension.
Okay.
And it's completely different. So
no problem. I was just wondering if I missed something when I was watching.
Yeah, it doesn't really make sense. I don't think there is any logic behind it. I think it's just that, like anything, you know, it's like, why did Bruce Banner turn into the Incredible Hulk when he got shot with some gamma rays? You know,
right?
You know, I mean, at least you know, Spider-Man kind of makes sense, you know, but he got bit by a spider, but
yep,
yeah. I don't know. It's comic books.
Yeah.
It's got its own logic. And so they end up putting everybody in this Area 57, which is like, you know, an Area 51 sort of thing. Where they are basically trying to figure out what the fuck's going on with these kids. And experimenting on them and shit. And they come up with a, you know, like, this suit to contain their powers. Reed escapes. And then, like, a year later, we find out Ben's been working for the government as the Thing. And, you know, has killed a bunch of people. I just want to emphasize that he's killed a bunch of people. Yep. Basically, you know, Reed's been hiding in Central America. He is eventually found by the United States military with Sue's help. She ends up basically figuring out the patterns or some bullshit to figure out where he is, and then finds him on the computer because he's using like some name, Captain Nemo, based in earlier on during their meet cute. We found out that was his favorite book.
Oh yeah, I like all your phrases. The pile of green shits and the patterns or some bullshit.
Yeah. Anyways, they find him in Central America where he's been hiding out and literally being able to change his face and, you know, somehow his voice too, where he becomes like a Spanish dude.
Yeah.
So, we have, they bring him back, Ben goes and gets him, basically, and, they bring him back, and, so, okay, like I said, everybody's been outfitted with these, like, cool suits that contain their powers so they can control them and everything. So when Reed is brought back, Dr. Allen conscripts him into rebuilding the quantum gate. in exchange for giving Reed the resources to find a cure for their abilities. So at some point, Dr. Allen sends some people into the through the quantum gate and to go and try to figure out what's going on the other side. While they're there, they find Victor, who is now been fused with his spacesuit and possesses telekinetic abilities. And they bring him back to Earth. He believes that all humanity needs to be destroyed, and he can rebuild Earth in his image. He starts killing the scientists in the base, including Dr. Allen and Professor Storm. Using the quantum gate, he goes back to the other to Planet Zero, and the Fantastic Four of Ben, Johnny, Reed, and Sue use the quantum gate when it comes back, and they go back to the Planet Zero, and what ends up happening? Victor, now calling himself Doom, in what is the worst part of the whole movie, in my opinion. I think he is the worst Dr. Doom I've ever seen on film.
Yeah. They only gave him like 10 minutes to be a villain, so it's not like...
Yeah. You know? So when they're there in a way too fast of a scene, they basically fight Doom and prevent him from destroying Earth.
Yeah.
In what is the most rushed end of a movie I've ever seen.
That's what made me mad about the movie, was that it had an hour of build-up, which I actually liked, thought it was good, and then all of a sudden they go to Planet Zero. Like, all of this, like, so Planet Zero, the first time, they bring him out, and then he kills all his people, and then he goes back. All of this took place in maybe 10 minutes time. Like, it's like, what?
Yeah, the movie needed to be about a half hour longer.
Yeah.
Or something. And, so basically what ends up happening is they defeat him. He disintegrates into nothing. Mm-hmm. While they're there, and, you know, they all use their, they realize, hey, he's stronger than each one of us, but he's not stronger than all of us combined.
Right,
you know,
right.
It's like, you know, we join our forces and we become, you know, the Power Rangers or some bullshit. And anyways, we're like, you know, Voltron or whatever. I don't know. And they return to Earth. The group is rewarded by the U.S. military for their heroics. And they're given a new base of operations, which they call Central City. I don't know why. When I think Central City, I think The Flash. But
exactly. Yeah. That's why I felt.
Yeah. I don't know if Central City has any basis in Marvel. It might. I don't know. They decide to help people use their abilities. And they take on the mantle of the Fantastic Four. After there's like these little jabs at each other for no reason whatsoever while they're trying to figure out the fucking name of the group that they're called. And for some odd reason, Ben Grimm and Johnny Storm are like being assholes to each other. And I don't even understand why.
Yeah,
like the dudes barely know each other. I'm like, what the fuck? Anyways, yeah, and in the way they do it, they're like, I got it. I know what we can call ourselves, and then the title card comes on the screen.
I know. Well, that's because Ben's like, he's looking at the thing. He's like, it's fantastic. And then Reed's like, what? Say that again? And he's like, what? It's fantastic. He's like, I think we just found our name. Oh, God.
Yeah, that was so lame. Yeah. Do you want to take a break, Matt?
Sure.
Okay, we're going to take a break here, and we'll be back with, I don't know, like some trivia and stuff from the movie.
You know, some green shit, you know?
Yeah, some more green shit. Yeah, if you have green shit, you might want to go see a doctor. Anyways, we'll be right back, folks. And like a human torch, we are back.
Yep.
I'm ready to take on this thing.
Oh, it's going fantastically.
Yes. It came about so fast I didn't even see it. It was like it was invisible.
Yeah, I know. And then, you know, after it was done, I had a really, you know, powerful sense of doom, you know.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so here's some trivia from the Internet Movie Database about this film. Ready for this, Matt?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. Stan Lee declined to make a cameo in the film.
Ooh. That's a slap in the face right there.
Yeah. In a quickly deleted tweet from August 6th, 2015, the director Josh Trank said, "A year ago, I had a fantastic version of this, and it would have received great reviews. You'll probably never see it. That's reality, though. After seeing this version, the studio mandated heavy reshoots." That's what he said. Okay. "After seeing this version, the studio mandated heavy reshoots. The newer scenes are easy to spot, as Kate Mara had to cut her hair. had cut her hair and wore a blonde wig. Miles Teller also had facial hair that would appear and disappear between shots." Kate Mara noted that she hadn't seen the movie a month after it's released and has been very unwilling to watch it due to the intensely negative reception. Marvel wasn't fond of the direction the film was going and made mention of it in the Marvel comic, The Punisher, number 12, has the Fantastic Four in the likeness of the cast members of this film get taken down in an explosion. After the disappointing reviews, Josh Trank went on to tweet that he'll never be working on a comic book movie ever again.
Wow.
The garage that Reed is working in as a child is the same garage in which Biff keeps his car in Back to the Future Part 2. Interesting. The characters of this film would have reverted back to Marvel if the film was delayed beyond 2015, because 20th Century Fox had a 7-year window to produce a new Fantastic Four film after Fantastic Four, The Rise of the Silver Surfer, with a release of 1 year after that time expired.
Oh.
So, yeah, that was in 2007, that Fantastic Four Rise of the Silver Surfer came out. Josh Trank had envisioned his movie of being about 2 hours and 20 minutes long. The studio cut that down to an hour and 40 minutes that we got, and that's probably why it feels so rushed.
Yeah.
After Trank finalized his version of the film in 2014, the studio was dissatisfied and didn't like the director's work. Fox demanded reshoots, which took place in early 2015, mainly due to creative differences and the fact that the studio thought his version of the film was too violent.
Okay.
Yeah. Mads Mikkelsen auditioned for the role of Dr. Doom, but walked out from his audition. I don't know why he would have been. He seems way too old to be that. Anyways, Kate Mara, but then again, these people are playing teenagers and they're like 20 years old. I mean, 10 years older than what that they were supposed to be
right.
at the time. So Kate Mara had initially wanted to read Fantastic Four comic books to prepare for her role as Sue Storm. But the filmmakers explained to the cast that it was unnecessary as the film was an original story, not based directly on the comics. Josh Trank reportedly wanted Allison Williams for the role of Sue Storm, but Fox overruled him in favor of Kate Mara. The promotional posters for the film depict a city in shambles from destruction, implying an action sequence set in the city with the Fantastic Four. Nothing of the sort ever happened in the film.
Wow.
It has been reported that 20th Century Fox interfered with the film to the point which Josh Trank's original movie layout was changed drastically. One of the major changes was the cutting out of three whole action scenes.
God.
At least Jamie Bell and Kate Mara got something out of the film, who played the Thing and the Invisible Woman, or Invisible Girl, or whatever. They married in 2017.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, at around 1 minute, a teacher jokes about young Reed building a flying car. In the comics, Reed Richards constructed the Fantastic Car, which is a flying car that served as the Fantastic Four's personal vehicle. There are actually, I saw online, there are shots of them using the Fantastic Car, which completely, that they were shot and they were completely cut out of the movie. Josh Trank fought for Miles Teller to get the role of Reed Richards against the wishes of the studio, only for the two men to end up nearly in a fist fight on set.
Wow.
Yeah.
This movie's like got a lot of drama behind it.
Yeah. Kate Mara, in the role of Sue Storm, the studio pushed for her for the role. And even though Trank didn't want her for the role, as a result, he was difficult to Mara and bullied her during filmmaking. So, yeah, I don't feel really sorry for Josh Trank, if that's the case, that he got in a fist fight with one of the actors and was bullying another.
I mean, yeah, he kind of, you know, karma kind of came back to him. I mean, he wasn't being, you know, a great person himself, you know, so, you know.
Yeah, there's a lot more trivia here. A former Fox CEO, Rupert Murdoch, expressed distaste for the movie, solely blaming it for one of Fox's fiscal quarters earning hundreds of millions lower than their expectations. Miles Teller, who has scars on his face, they were added to the younger version of Reed Richards, the actor playing him. So,
yeah. Mm-hmm.
There's way too many. Here we go. Here. Central City was the team's locale in Marvel's Fantastic Four number one.
Mm.
Nowadays, it's more widely known as the home of DC Comics hero The Flash.
Okay. Yeah, I was wondering.
Yeah, so then, I guess, you know, it's the term Central City is kind of generic anyways, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, like, because I know, like, in D.C., they got Hub City, they've got Central City, they've got Starling City, you know, kind of like,
Metropolis and Gotham.
Right. Also, too, did you mention a part yet about the whole controversy about how Sue and Johnny could be siblings when one is black and the other's white?
Oh, no, I haven't. Okay. You can go ahead and mention that.
Okay, well, I read something earlier that he actually wanted Sue Storm to be black, so the whole family would be black, but the studio didn't want that or whatever, so then that's what made it that they were like, she was like adopted, or, well, they didn't even say that in the movie, which, well, you know. Right,
they did.
Oh, they did? Okay, all right.
Yeah, because she was from Kosovo.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I mean, I had read that, you know, it's like they said they didn't want to cast a, they needed star power, so they wanted Kate Mara in there, who was kind of known from TV at that point, but not really well known.
Yeah.
I mean, her sister was more well known at that time, Rooney Mara, but, you know, from Social Network and other things. They wanted some star power, but my thing is, are you to make us believe that there's not a single African American or black woman actress with star power?
Right.
That just doesn't make sense. Anyways. Basically, yeah. Michael B. Jordan described the story as a bunch of kids that had an accident and have disabilities now that they have to cope with and and try to find a life afterwards.
That's great.
It makes sense.
Of. I mean, well, that's how Ben kind of viewed his condition, because the only reason why he even agreed to work for the military is so that they would find a cure for him, basically. Yeah. So,
I don't know. I mean, I can understand the people being pissed off at it for being too dark or something, or being too rushed at the end. I understand why people didn't like the movie, but yeah. Like you were saying, there was a lot of backlash. I remember back when this came out about Michael B. Jordan as Johnny Storm, and I'm like, why? You know?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Shouldn't
matter the color of his skin. He's a great actor. Well, so.
I remember the argument that some of the people that were thought that they were being clever were saying. What they were really saying was that they didn't want to see a black person in a superhero, but so they were trying to couch it in terms of, oh, well, I want to see black superheroes who actually are black in the comics and make movies about those characters, which that was just what they were saying. Their real intention was that they didn't want to see, you know, so. Yeah. Like, I want to see those characters. I'm like, oh, the characters that you just looked up on Google right now that you didn't know existed until this argument on Facebook happened or whatever, you know, like, I mean, I'm sorry, that's probably what it was. Look up black superhero characters. Okay, oh, that is a good one. Yeah, I want to see this movie at this random character that has, like, three issues. Like, okay, really?
I mean, I understand the point of, like, let's create new characters that, you know, are black, but still, it's like... Or let's, you know, do movies about characters that are. But the studio, 20th Century Fox, didn't have the rights to any of those characters.
Right.
I mean, they could have created their own, I guess, you know, and not have it associated with Marvel. But still, you know, you want to be associated with the comics, you know, that are already established. And you know you're going to get a bigger box office based upon established IP as opposed to... you know, a new character.
Right. And what was that movie? Was it Scarlett Johansson was in where it was like a Japanese?
Oh, it was Ghost in the Shell.
Okay. Yeah. So I noticed that most of these people didn't complain about a Japanese character being now a Caucasian character, actress. So that's interesting that all of a sudden the race is going to be switched that way, but then it's like the end of the world if Johnny Storm's black, you know? So I thought that was kind of interesting.
I did find it funny on the last episode of 2020 of SNL, where they had the jokes shared between Colin Jost and Michael Che.
Oh, God.
They gave each other, and they were talking about how Scott Stapp is playing playing Frank Sinatra in an upcoming movie. And then Colin Jost had to say, but that's okay because Sammy Davis Jr. is being played by Scarlett Johansson.
Wow.
Which is hilarious on several levels because that's his wife.
Right, yeah, no. Michael always makes some really like racist jokes that he writes, or also something to do about his wife as well. It's like,
yeah. That's fun. That was funny. Yeah, okay, here's another trivia here. Victor's last name was originally going to be Domashev, and he was envisioned as a blogger with a programming skills. His surname was kept the same, and any mention of him blogging is removed from the final film. By being kept the same, it was kept as Von Doom and not Domashev. Mm. There's other things too. Like there's a few other like goofs in the movie that I thought was interesting. Like they had on the screen and they were trying to say that Ben was born in like 1986.
Mm.
Yet the movie begins originally in 2007.
Right.
And if that was the case, and he was still in high school in 2015. The dude's really stupid.
Well, yeah, we'll see. Because they were like
plus
10
he was,
years old.
Plus, he was a little kid in 2007, and all of a sudden.
So,
yeah.
That would make him probably born in like 1997 or something like that.
Yeah.
And yeah, I don't think they thought that through.
No.
Sorry, I don't even think they would let you go to high school if you're like 28 years old. Like,
no, there's a little issues there. And
like, just get your GED.
Yeah.
You know?
And I, you know, I think it was just a misprint on there. It was just,
yeah.
Anyways, do you want to take another break, Matt?
Sure.
Okay, we'll be right back, folks.
Sure.
And we are back. So, want to look at some reviews here, Matt?
Yeah.
Okay.
Let's do.
So, here are some reviews from the Internet Movie Database. here's one written August 28th, my birthday, 2016. 1 out of 10 stars.
Oof.
This movie was a waste of time by Suhel 28. I began watching this movie with great anticipation. However, it really failed me within 20 minutes of it. I still continued to watch and thought that the movie would get kicked off now, but the now never came. The worst thing is that the Invisible Girl got her powers without going to space. Nobody went to space, you fucking dupe. Anyways, that is so stupid because all my life I have been brought up seeing the girl in space and getting power, not outside of it. More than an hour into the movie and there is no action. The villain appears in the last 30 minutes. The fight lasts 10 minutes and the movie is over. Really a waste of time and money. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm okay with the build-up being an hour long. That's my whole thing is the ending was too short. Not
exactly. Like, it should have been longer.
Like every superhero movie you watch, if you time it out, it's almost an hour of build-up. Like, I mean, like, I don't know exactly, but if you timed it...
Unless it's, like, the sequel or something, you know, you get, like...
Yeah, okay, but...
Once you've established the character, but any origin story is going to take a little while.
Yeah.
This is a 2 out of 10 from August 5th of 2015. Fantastic Four equals Fantastic Boar. This is from MMan69. Terrible movie. As previous reviewer writes, the pacing is all wrong. The characters are bleh. You don't feel any attachment to them, with them creating no chemistry. The middle section of the movie is drawn out, while the climax feels rushed. The director went, gosh, we're running, but he spelled were with an H in it. It's actually where. We're running out of time. Quick, wrap it up. After the recent awesome Avenger movies and the Thors, this felt like some hacked together 1990s offering. The story has so many gaps in it, with supposedly super smart scientists doing super stupid things, and Miles Teller playing Mr. Fantastic is just a terrible choice. He has no screen presence as a leader. Wait for DVD or whatever and let it go quietly into the past. I actually thought Miles Teller was really good in the movie, but that's just me.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah. I like him as an actor, though. So, here's another one, 1 out of 10. It's called That's All? This was written in December of 2018 from G. Charles 01612. Here's the whole review. I was waiting for something to happen, and then the movie was over. I'm trying to find a good review here, which might be kind of hard to do. Yeah, like the highest I'm finding is like a 4 out of 10. Let's see, here's a 5 out of 10. Let's see. Okay, anyways. Yeah, I'm seeing that 4s and 5s are about the highest that this thing gets.
Wow.
Here's another bad one. 1 out of 10. Worst film ever. Yeah, I know. That's why I wanted to read it. This is from Y Cheryl Whip 96470658. Written August 9th of 2015. Over the last few years, Marvel have been rebooting films quicker than we can blink, which is either because they need to keep the rights to the film and are desperate, or because they want to tie it into their universe. By the way, they spelt their, T-H-E-R-E. Let's start with their, again spelled wrong. Recent ones, The Amazing Spider-Man, which... first one was good, but second one was awful. It's funny because these are all made by different studios, but we're not going to... okay, we'll get... was as awful as Spider-Man 3 with Venom. DC rebooted Batman with Christopher Nolan and made one of the best trilogy films you will ever find. DC showed Marvel how to do it correctly, so you would think... with the Fantastic Four reboot, it would be worth a watch. Wrong. Avoid at all costs. All in capital letters. This reboot is embarrassing and makes no sense at all. To the point, DC are probably rolling around in their office laughing. From start to finish, it's just cringeworthy. There is nothing good or interesting about this film at all. If you want to watch a proper reboot, watch Batman Begins. Okay, this just sounds like a DC fanboy.
Yeah.
Who doesn't even understand the fact that the Spider-Man movies were made by Sony and the Fantastic Four movies were made by 20th Century Fox, and Marvel made the other movies. So, yeah, anyways, it looks pretty much like most of these reviews are 1 out of 10.
Wow.
Yeah. of the like 869 that are on.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. Wild. That's wild.
Anyways, final questions here, Matt.
Yeah.
What was your favorite part of the movie?
I like the when they first went into Planet Zero, like before all the bad stuff happened, like when they're just kind of like looking at the whole landscape and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And also too, I like it like when, it was really sad, but like when Ben, didn't really know what was going on with them, and he was asking Reed for help, and didn't, was asking him not to leave, and then Reed just went and abandoned him, essentially. Well, from Ben's point of view, Reed abandoned him,
Yeah.
And I mean, even though that was sad, that was kind of one of my favorite parts of the movie, when Reed escaped the holding facility that they're in.
Okay, and second question, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Would you recommend this movie to anyone?
Yeah, but I would caution them that they're probably going to be disappointed with it after the decent build-up, because it doesn't really follow through after that. So they might feel like I felt, because I was actually quite enjoying myself for the first hour, and then all of a sudden they find Victor, and then they take him back, and then Victor kills a bunch of people and then goes back to Planet Zero. And all of this takes place in like 13 minutes. I'm like, okay. And then, So I'm just saying, like, they could have done, because like they could have done like a Wrath of Khan thing, where like, they take him on board the ship, try to figure out what's going on. Is he good? Is he a villain? We don't really know. Type of thing. Then let him build up his villainous nature a little bit. Over time.
Yeah, it was way too rushed at the end. I enjoyed it up until about the last half hour.
Yeah.
And then I thought it should have been about an hour longer. I mean, or a half hour longer or something.
And again, that's not the director's fault. That's the studio that pretty much made it happen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Hollywood interference.
Yep.
Anyways, folks, that was our look at the 2015 film Fantastic Four. Please do us a favor and check out our Patreon and follow us on the social meds, and then like the on the books. And the
books
and the twits
and the gram
and the gram and follow mostly at either All Too Real 2 or Cullen Park
or the tubes.
Yeah, you can check us out on the tubes. We have our show up on the tubes.
Maybe later on the talks, we're not sure yet.
Maybe someday we'll do the tickety talks and and the zibbity zaps and the zoobity zoops. Are those things?
Not yet, but they probably will be in like a year.
Yes. And don't forget about the MySpace. Oh wait, that's way.
Wait, what?
Oh, that's way gone.
Yeah.
Friendster. Follow us on Friendster.
Yeah, man. Or classmates.com or whatever it was called.
Yeah.
That was the original Facebook. He had a sign. He actually purchased a yearly membership.
Yeah, I know. Oh, wow. Good times.
Yep.
Back in the early aughts. And yes, check out the links in the show notes. Be sure to love us because nobody else does. And wait. What am I saying? Anyways, I'm being desperate here. Anyways, until next time, this has been Michael E. Cullen II and
Matthew Sue Storm, Human Torch, the thing, Mr. Fantastic. Pass.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to All Too Real 2 podcast, a Cullen Park production. Produced and edited by Michael E. Cullen II. Music by Matthew Hawes. Subscribe and share the show. Visit us at cullenpark.com.